From Central Park in New York City, Eastside Massive says, welcome to the GCN show! Woo!
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, the world's most cycling-friendly country is about to make a huge mistake that could have a big impact on the perception of cycling and the number of people riding there.
Plus, the brand new bike that Tadej Pogačar will be racing on from today, a sexy new gravel bike, how one pro cyclist has programmed AI to do the research that no scientist has yet done, they're proposing an island to make all cyclists wear high vis, and not just one, but two end-of-show super nuggets.
Super nuggets?
Yeah.
Something to look forward to. Mm. Feels like there's a lot to cram in this week.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that for the first 30 seconds of Pogačar's attack on the infamous climb of La Redoute on Sunday, he averaged 30 kilometres per hour.
Oh, and we should say that is a 10% gradient. Mm.
Now, in doing so, he also reportedly set a world record 4-minute power to weight effort, although we've no idea how that's been verified.
No.
However, despite the speed and power he produced, he still had some company over the top.
Yeah, exciting this, isn't it? He was babysitting 19-year-old Paul Sexas, the young man who could be not just the saviour of French cycling, but world cycling, frankly, because it was almost unthinkable, what, like 6 months ago, that someone might ever get close to Tadej Pogačar.
Ultimately, as you probably know, he did succumb to the world champion's pace on the final climb of the race, but nevertheless, that was a performance that'll put the heebie-jeebies up quite a lot of people's side, isn't it?
You need a translation, by the way, for heebie-jeebies. Does that go around the world, that one?
I don't know. Look it up. I mean, it just made them scared, basically.
Yeah.
And, of course, Pogačar did win the race in the end, whilst Demi Vollering was even more dominant in the women's event.
Yeah, that was impressive, wasn't it? Now, we also learned last week from Strava data that cyclists logged 550 million miles on the platform last year just from commuting, which is quite a long way, although I actually always forget to log my commutes as commutes, so they could probably add another 3,000 onto that.
Or can they, Si, now that you're not strictly on Strava?
Well, I mean, would we say that I am not strictly on Strava anymore? This morning's commute isn't on Strava.
No.
Yet. Okay. Anyway, we'll get onto that later, shall we? Instead, let's move on to the lead story. So last week, we mentioned an article from Dutch News, which made for some sobering reading. So the Netherlands, cycling nirvana, I think we could call it, the country with the highest rates of cycling in the world, the safest place on the planet to ride a bike, is facing rising casualty figures and an increase in fatal accidents as well.
And we're not talking small increases either. 81,000 cyclists went to hospital after a cycling accident in 2025, which is a 9% increase on the year before and a quarter more than a decade ago. Meanwhile, 281 cyclists were killed.
Yeah, now that is in itself, a 3% increase in a decade. And more worryingly still, perhaps, that's an increase relative to the total share of road fatalities, from 32% of all deaths on the roads to 39% in that same decade.
Now, for any country, obviously those would be concerning numbers, but of all of them, the Netherlands takes road safety really blooming seriously,
which really does.
A good thing, of course.
Oh, yeah.
What's been suggested is that because a large number of those injuries are head injuries, that the famously carefree bareheaded Dutch cyclists begin to wear helmets.
Yeah. Now, at face value, that makes sense, right? If people are getting head injuries, then wear a helmet. But the risk is that in taking all those crash statistics at face value, we might actually be drawing the wrong conclusions.
For example, Si, I saw an article on Transport Extra, which said...
On what?
On Transport Extra.
What's that?
Transport Extra is the ultimate transport research featuring the news and analysis and comment from the leading transport trade press, as well as sophisticated documents library, if memory serves me correctly.
All right. Sorry. Right up your street then.
It is, exactly. Anyway, the article questioned why countries were so keen to copy the Dutch approach to road safety when, at face value, their cycling safety record was actually worse than the UK.
Hmm. I think they might have jumped to conclusions on that article, but what is going on? Well, three really important things. So firstly, the casualty statistics are big numbers. But that is because Dutch people cycle so much. So 27% of all journeys there are taken by bike. Now that compares to about 1% of all journeys in the USA by bike and 2% in the UK. And would you believe it, it's still 2 to 3 times higher than any other country. And that includes Denmark.
In fact, the average Dutch person cycles 1,000 kilometres per year.
Yeah, so many kilometres that if Dan was Dutch, you'd actually be skewing the average down quite significantly.
Wow. Not last year, obviously, because I did a third of that on just one single ride, if you remember.
You did indeed, yeah. I think that's called binge cycling, isn't it?
Pretty good term for it, yeah. Anyway, back to the point, Si. Injuries per kilometre are way, way lower than in other countries. So other countries should still look at how the Dutch do cycling, we think. Secondly, and very importantly, according to Dutch hospital data, 80% of serious injuries and 45% of fatalities from cyclists have nothing to do with vehicles, and most have nothing to do with anyone at all.
Yeah, so literally people cycling along and falling off, right? Now, while you might argue that that happens in all other countries as well, from what we understand, the Netherlands is unique in reporting people falling off their bikes on their own as a road crash. So in the US, for example, a crash has to involve at least one motor vehicle. The others just don't get reported.
No, very different, isn't it? So you can see why the statistics are actually a little different to how they first appear. In fact, when you think about it, 80% and 45% higher, respectively.
Yeah. Now, nevertheless, you might be wondering why the country that has given birth to Mathieu van der Poel and Marianne Vos could have so many people falling off their bikes every year. To find the answer, we need to dive even deeper into the stats.
You might have to bear with us on this part. So the amount cycled per year in the Netherlands is increasing year on year, which is great. And it's largely a result of more older people riding bikes and riding them further.
Yeah, so take a look at this graph from some research from Wegman and Sheppers, and you can see really clearly the increase in yellow and red. Now, those are the 50 to 74-year-olds and the 75-year-olds plus.
Mm, and older people, as we know, are more vulnerable to falls and to crashes.
Yeah, you know that firsthand, don't you? Because your ankle just broke when you hit 42.
It was about 42, yeah. Not exactly, Si. So more older people riding more kilometres is obviously going to skew the statistics with significantly more injuries.
Yeah. Our good friend Marco ter Bromelstroot, who is a Dutch professor who specialises in urban mobility, and who actually watches the show.
He does.
Hello, Marco. He pointed out that the number of people who die every day in the Netherlands from a fall of any kind is 19. The number of people who die from a fall on a bike is 1 per 5 days. So it is a tiny fraction of the total number of people who are tragically dying from falls, right? But essentially, if more older people ride bikes, the greater the proportion of deaths from falls will occur on a bike instead.
If a neurosurgeon looks at those stats, the answer is clear. If those people were wearing a helmet, they might survive, so make them wear a helmet. If you ask a general practitioner or a cardiologist or almost all other medical specialities, they might have a different answer. Keep people as active as possible to stop them dying from all other causes, which we know is the benefit of staying active.
Yeah, the stats also show there are a higher proportion of crashes from e-bikes. But again, that doesn't actually mean that e-bikes are necessarily more dangerous for the reason that we've just been talking about.
Lots of people think that they are, though.
Well, they do, yeah.
For example, Patrick Halen, 460, only last week's GCN show, who said, regarding e-bikes and accidents, more and more inexperienced bikers going faster and faster without actually realising what it takes to handle a bike at higher speeds. This is a recipe for disaster, and the problem will only get worse.
I don't agree with that.
I didn't think you would.
No. I mean, for one, e-bikes are easier to ride than normal bikes, aren't they? Like,
can be, yeah.
Lower centre of gravity, tend to be more relaxed. And it's not like when you jump on an e-bike, you're jumping on a Ducati here, are we?
Not
like,
quite that powerful.
No, exactly. The power output is much, much lower. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you do get loads of old Dutch people riding around in turbo mode, but...
Maybe, yeah. I choose turbo mode on Lorraine's e-bike when I go down the shops every time. But what we can say, though, is that extra riding is helping high-risk people keep riding for longer, which has got to be a good thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, of course, none of this stops helmets from being a sensible choice, but in much the same way that it would be a sensible choice to wear a helmet when you're travelling in a car or perhaps when you're walking on a slippery bathroom floor. However, the risk from telling people that cycling is dangerous and encouraging helmet use is potentially far worse, not to mention just kind of wrong.
Marco also pointed out that 49 young people were killed in car crashes last year in the Netherlands, but on e-bikes, it was only 6.
Yeah, exactly. So the pursuit of cycling safety is kind of leading people down the wrong path, isn't it? Although, I admit, it is a difficult line to tread, isn't it? Simultaneously saying that we want safer cycling, but also that cyclists shouldn't be made to wear helmets. Sounds like a bit of a paradox, right? But the distinction, I think, has to be between cyclists getting hit by cars and cyclists falling off by themselves. Because more falls are potentially a sign of more cyclists, which is actually not a bad thing. The bit that's unacceptable is more crashes with cars, right?
Yeah, and I think perhaps people watching this, because most of you watching this will be properly into cycling as a leisure activity, as opposed to just getting around town like a lot of Dutch people do. So you've got a different mentality. So I also think I'm going to wear a helmet, also because I have an abundance of helmets to choose from at home, so it's very easy. But if you're in a country like the Netherlands and more so like Denmark, etc., it's a very different philosophy, I think, to riding a bike. And it is quite safe. The statistics show that. And so, like you said, if you then start to make helmets mandatory, not only do people think, well, I've got to go and buy a helmet, but also, oh, maybe this is more dangerous than I first thought. Especially when you see those statistics of deaths being bandied about and the increase over the years, it might make people think twice about making journeys they've been making for years and years on a bike.
Yeah, whereas those same people probably wouldn't think twice about getting in a car when that's actually where you're more likely to get into an accident and potentially die.
But you feel safer because you're surrounded by a big metal cage.
That's it, yeah. You just then happen to drive around everywhere at 100 kilometres per hour. And
not everywhere.
All right, a lot of places. But anyway, yeah, be super interested to know your thoughts on all of this. I don't even know what we're asking, really. Like, should helmets be compulsory? That's the one thing. Do you think the statistics are being manipulated? And if so, what should be done about it, if anything at all?
I think we'd like, sort of, not contradicting opinions, but there are obviously some people that live in Australia where I think helmets are mandatory, right? There are other people that were living in Amsterdam or in Copenhagen will have very different thought processes and have seen very different things to elsewhere in the world. So we'd love to get your thoughts if you're in those particular countries, but all of you are welcome to give your opinion. Right, just before we move on, I want to tell you about two new additions to our One Day Classics prints. We've got one of them, La Doyenne. I had it just here. There we go. This one was one we showed you last week for the oldest classic of them all. We're also going to have another new one coming fairly soon, which is for the last monument of the season, which takes place in October in Italy. And that's the Race of the Falling Leaves.
Did we not have that one as well somewhere?
No, we might have done, but
I'm pretty sure
I've got another one to show you in a minute.
Oh, go on then.
Okay.
All right. Now, as most of you know, the first men's Grand Tour is just around the corner. So we also wanted to create something to celebrate that one.
Here we go. Yeah. When we say we wanted to create something, by the way, we mean Designer Dan.
Designer Dan wanted to create something. Yeah.
So like all the previous spring classics prints, this one is available in A3 size, which is exactly what you see here. We've got the smaller A4 size as well. They all come framed, as you see with these ones. And if you like the look of it, and why wouldn't you, you'd like to make a purchase, just scan the QR code that should be on the screen now, or simply head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com, which is where you'll find all our other merchandise as well.
Yeah. You know, it's such a good thing that they come framed. Getting stuff framed is the biggest pain in the butt.
Oh, it is, isn't it? I've had to do that in the past.
Yeah, like framing yourself always looks a bit crap, and then you take it to a framer's where it looks flipping amazing. It also costs £1 million. Anyway, speaking of framed prints, last week we did say we'd give a shout out to the best two photos that you guys have submitted of them hanging on your wall. So GCN viewers' cribs, yeah. What are going to go for?
Oh, it's good looking through all of these.
Yeah.
First up though, Keith Corson, who said, love the prints, easy to purchase, things arrive quickly, and I love the prints and frames, great addition to the Pain Cave, and I think that looks spectacular.
Very nice indeed, yeah. And then secondly, Dan, who said, I mounted the first 4 One Day Classics prints in my office at work. Love the splash of colour it gives to the otherwise dull wall. And they also make a great conversation piece.
And that wasn't me, Dan, or Designer Dan. It was a different Dan.
No.
Who's made the purchases.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with that new bike of Tadej Pogačar that he will be riding on this year.
Well, today, in fact, I believe we're recording this the day before it comes out, but I presume by the time you watch this, he will have used it at the prologue of the Tour de Romandie, which he's competing at for the first time. Anyway, it is the Colnago TT2, which is an evolution from the TT1 that Pogacar and his UAE teammates have been using successfully for the past few years.
I think it's TT2.
Probably.
TT2.
TT1.
That's right. Colnago claim that the main aim with the new bike was to reduce the weight of the bike whilst either maintaining or slightly improving the aerodynamics.
Mm. There's also a new sexy felt gravel bike that was released last week, which is called the Breed. Tyre clearance is up to 54 millimetres. It's 22% lighter than its predecessor and 10% more aero. You think it looks smoking hot?
I do think it looks smoking hot. Yeah, that is a nice looking gravel bike. In other tech news, Sella San Marco have just introduced a new range of saddles specifically designed for gravel and all-road cycling. And I have one here.
Called the Short Fit All-Road range. They say they focus on stability and vibration through a more compact profile that's also waved. It's also got a bow rail system which gives further shock absorption, plus integrated shock absorbers that filter out high-frequency vibrations.
It's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can I say what I like, actually? You see that little kind of like, lip at the back, I suppose you could call it? I like having one of those when riding off-road. Yeah, it kind of gives you something to push back against.
Yeah, with all your power.
So to speak.
Stop you sliding off the back.
Exactly, yeah. Now, there are three models. Each is available in a small and a large. Sport, racing, and super comfort racing. Mm. I tell you what, if you're going to buy a saddle, you definitely get super comfort racing.
Super comfort racing, yeah.
That sounds good, yeah.
We're going to move on now to a very interesting LinkedIn post. I don't think we've ever done this before.
We've never had a LinkedIn post on GCN.
A very interesting
before.
LinkedIn post by Olympic road champion Kristen Faulkner.
Yeah. It says a lot about her that she's chosen to post this on LinkedIn. Well, you'll find out in a sec. For those that don't know, Faulkner came quite late to cycling, didn't she? Having already had a career as a venture capitalist and an investment associate in New York City. She studied computer science at Harvard.
It's a fairly impressive CV, especially when you add Olympic champion.
When you add Olympic champion, yeah,
it's not bad, fairly impressive.
Yeah. Anyway, in her post on LinkedIn, she described how she had spent the last couple of months coding for 10 hours or more a day around her training.
Dedication, yeah.
Yeah.
So what she was doing was figuring out a way to use the 9 years of her own biometric data to try and make sense of that data, and then more importantly, to then use it to help her make improvements to her riding.
Yeah. She, I think, is even more of a biometric data nerd than you.
I know, yeah.
Isn't she? The system that she has now built uses that biometric data. What are we talking? Like, kind of sleep data, it was like DEXA scans, I think we're quoted
HRV, in there. Menstrual cycle, like pretty much everything that you can measure with a wearable or anything else, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot of data. Anyway, she's also then got 4,000 hours of bike training, and she's built personal models of her physiology. She says that using it has helped to produce her best ever 20-minute power and achieve 3 gold medals at the Pan Am Championships recently.
I think you're right, so I think this is right up my street, this kind of system.
Yeah, if only you were smart enough to make your own AI.
Well, yeah, precisely. I mean, I could confidently present the findings, just couldn't get the findings in the first place.
Just couldn't find the findings. No.
But I would genuinely be fascinated to see what a similar system would make of my own efforts to get healthier in recent years. I've also got a lot of biometric data in the last couple of years, at least.
Not 4,000 hours of riding, unfortunately.
Well, I'd have to go, I probably have, but I'd have to go quite a long way back. I'm not sure how much the system would be able to tell me about my current position based on what I was doing in 2010, but there you go. But I'm sure I could put all of that data to more constructive use than I currently am.
I mean, I suspect you could. You could probably ask Kristen if you could borrow her AI model.
Well, I was thinking that, but I presume it's bespoke to her. Maybe not.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I literally wouldn't have a clue where to start.
I'm genuinely going to get in touch with her because, well, let me know in the comments. I'd be genuinely interested to see what she's found out from using this system and AI to get to that point. Yeah, let us know.
Send her a message on LinkedIn, mate. Connect.
Is that what you do?
I think that's what you do on LinkedIn, that you connect with people.
I think so, yeah. My wife and son use it religiously, but I...
Do they?
I sometimes just see who's trying to connect with me and then I flick off it after about a minute.
I don't know why that's so funny. It's just quite dismissive. Work, yeah, that's for like other people to do on LinkedIn.
Well, I don't know. I've had the same job for 13 years and I have no intention of moving jobs, so it just seems a bit pointless for me.
And there's rarely bicycles on there either.
Is there not? Sounds like you spent a lot of time on it.
Well, I mean, not really, but just every now and then, like, you get drawn onto something, like Christian Faulkner, and then you're like, well, now I'm on here, I'm going to have a scroll through. Lots of people on my feed talking about how other brands have got marketing wrong.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, everyone's doing it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why we're not on it more often. You're selling it well here.
Well, a lot of people look like they just write their posts with AI. There's a LinkedIn style, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Something a bit fishy going on. Yeah, anyway, we're going to move on to something completely different now. Something a bit more serious, actually, but really, really important. So the Magnus White Bill is close to passing into law. The background to this is the tragic death of 17-year-old American cyclist Magnus White, who was killed by a distracted driver in Colorado 3 years ago.
Shortly after he passed away, his parents started the White Line Foundation with the aim of ending preventable road deaths within 12 years. So the Magnus White Bill aims to modify current automatic emergency braking regulations by including the detection of vulnerable road users by autumn 2029. And as I said, it's now coming close to being passed.
Yeah, now what's slightly bonkers is that the technology to detect vulnerable road users, like cyclists, already exists, but apparently not always in the cars sold in the US, whereas EU regulations already require it. So essentially, I think we're right in saying, the same car would be sold in the EU where it would have to recognise a cyclist, but then if they sold that car in the US, they could essentially switch that bit off.
Yeah, it's not currently a requirement from what I understand. So here's hoping, obviously, that it does pass. Because, like I said, I couldn't think of any reason why you wouldn't want cars to be able to do that, especially, like you say, it sounds like it's just a touch of a button to switch the function on.
Yeah, bizarre. Anyway, speaking of safety, again, a proposed bill in Ireland, which kind of got my blood boiling a little bit. Something we saw on Road CC, who reported that Tipperary County councillors are to lobby the Minister for Transport to impose mandatory high-visibility clothing at night for cyclists.
Not just cyclists, though, when I was reading this on Road CC, also scooter users and pedestrians as well.
Yeah. Now, it's the pedestrians bit that's got my blood boiling, OK? Because surely that is the point at which you've lost the plot, right? So to say that in order to solve road safety problems, pedestrians have to wear high vis, as opposed to questioning who on earth is mowing people down at night, you know, what are the... Do you know what I mean?
Like, I know what you mean, yeah. I've just got visions of high vis jackets being handed out at nightclubs at 3 a.m. for those that have forgotten to take them with them.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is not actually the first time this bill has been proposed, although on the previous occasion, it was dismissed one day later after an almighty backlash.
Yes, surprising that. No. Although mandatory high vis and helmets does already apply to e-bike and e-scooter riders. I mean, it's a bit like the helmet thing with the Netherlands, isn't it, right? Like, it's sensible to wear these things. The issue is that these are the things that contribute to that victim-blaming culture. Like, the problem is not someone walking home at 11 o'clock at night wearing a normal jacket. The problem is the fact that the system exists that means that they then need to be lit up like a Christmas tree in order to decrease their chances of getting killed by someone driving a car.
Could make stab-proof vests mandatory, couldn't we?
Well, this is it, right? Anyway,
we should move on.
Anyway.
Move on to a bit of racing news. So two riders actually already withdrawn from the upcoming Giro d'Italia before the race has even started. João Almeida announced yesterday that he would have to miss the race, citing recent sickness and unexplained poor form.
That's a shame, isn't it?
Real shame. He was a second favourite behind Vingegaard.
Yeah, and then the other is Mikel Landa, who crashed recently in his home race, Tour of the Basque Country. Initial examinations didn't reveal any fractures, but on close inspection, it was found he had a small fracture in his pelvis. Mm.
He doesn't have much luck, does he, Lander? He crashed really hard out of the Giro last year and took a long time to come back. Anyway, speaking of the Giro, we're hoping to have our big preview of the race out on GCN Racing by the weekend. So the race actually starts a week on Friday, somewhat unbelievably.
Whoa.
And since it's a holiday on Monday in the UK, yes, another one, we want to get out sooner rather than later, so stay tuned for that if you're into your racing.
A holiday and the weather forecast looked good.
Yeah, nice. We've had great weather for training for Seven Gravel, haven't we?
We have. Yeah. We'll update people at the end, shall we?
Is that a third nugget?
Okay. I don't think you can call that a nugget.
All right.
That's just kind of like, you know.
Just an update.
Just idle chatter. We'll finish
that's the whole show.
No, some of it's not idle chatter. Some of it's really important stuff, isn't it? Right, we'll finish Cycling Shorts with a reminder of the Wahoo giveaway that is currently going on. So this is your opportunity to win an Element Bolt 3 GPS head unit.
Entries are accepted worldwide, and you'll find a link in the description below that will take you straight through to the competition page.
Yeah, so you've got until 10 a.m. UK time on Friday to get your entry in. Seems like a strange time to draw it to a close, but I don't know.
Got to pick a time, haven't
you? You've got to pick a time, yeah. Anyway, we will announce the winner the following week.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Hack /bodge of the week. Now, five again to show you this week. First up, from Gertoo. Cycling shoes are one of the more costly parts of a cycler's apparel. I hate it when they get abrasion marks when they overlap the tyre on my front wheel. Something you don't get, Si, you were telling me earlier.
Oh, no, I do get toe overlap. It just doesn't bother me. Lots of people get really bothered by toe overlap. They're like, oh, my God, yeah. This bike's awful, I get toe overlap.
I take their point, because when I had those brand new white Shimano shoes for that Dubai Gran Fondo and I had a bit of black on my shoes at the end on the toes, was a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Tried to clean it up, it wasn't perfect.
No,
anyway,
yeah.
Over time, this leads to damage. To combat this, I created toe bumpers out of electrical tape. Using Adobe Illustrator, I created a stylish Adobe. Template.
That's sorry, that's Adobe. Adobe. Yeah.
What did I say? Adobe?
Adobe.
It's been quite a long time since I've had an
I never need to go on LinkedIn. I haven't got a clue what Adobe is.
You look like a media
company. Oh, dear.
What?
Can I carry on now?
Yeah, oh yeah, you carry on.
I mean, they'll cut that out. I'll say Adobe now. Put that word instead for me. Right, I created a stylish template in the shape of the tip of the shoe and cut the shape out using an X-Acto knife. I adhered them to the tip of the shoes, thus protecting them from abrasion. This keeps my shoes looking like new. In addition, the toe bumpers can be removed and reapplied. I found high-quality electrical tape works best, as it doesn't leave residue on the shoes. It can be found in many colours to match your shoe style. Okay, first things first, this is a professional level photo of the shoes.
Yeah, that's someone who knows their way around Adobe.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks great, doesn't it? When I first read it, it was like electrical tape, I was like, oh God, this is going to be awful. But I don't know how you've done it.
No.
I mean, you're using words there that I don't understand either, but it looks great.
Yeah, I'm giving that a hack, remarkably.
Yeah.
Like you, when I read out electrical tape, I was thinking, well, this is going in one direction only, and that's not hack, but that's what we're going with.
Yeah. What's an X-Acto knife? Is that something on the Avengers?
Oh, X-Acto?
Exacto.
No, that's just me trying to show you up.
Oh, see?
pretend you're not going to know what it says.
Okay, hack, should we say?
Yeah.
Hack, you've used some excellent long words and it all looks fantastic. Alan Tayer sent this one in. Given how useless I normally am at DIY, I was pleasantly surprised with my roadside hack today. Cycling back from Oxford down Pish Hill, I believe that is, I got a sidewall slash.
Pish Hill. So I'm a Piss Hill or Pish Hill or Pish Hill.
Ah, okay. Like, yeah, it being the UK, it was probably Piss Hill, and now someone's trying to make it a little bit less. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. I got a sidewall slash. I was a bit doubtful of the banknote trick, so I decided to use the slashed tube as a protective inner lining. Turns out butyl tubes are quite easy to cut and strip with your teeth and hands.
I don't believe this.
Savage. 2 20-centimetre strips for good measure. Got me home just fine. New tyres ordered. Now, you brought this up earlier on, Dan, pointing out that the tube looks like it's been cut with X-Acto knife, not just a pair of Nashes. So fair play,
I think,
Alan.
It's because when you really focus in on the valve part of the tube there, there's like these sort of circular round bits. So I presume it just rips around them a little bit easier.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm such a nerd. I'm looking at the length of that valve with envy. There's a dearth of long valve inner tubes.
Is there?
In my house these days. Yeah. And it's a constant source of panic if ever I ride in on a fancy pants bike. Mm. Anyway, that's a slight aside.
I'm going to say hack, just through the use of teeth to get through an inner tube.
Yeah, roadside hack. If you got your home.
Imagine the car drivers came past, like those cyclists, they're just weird. Just trying to eat an inner tube. Can I just point out that even though you're so happy with your pronunciation of the name, it's actually Talia rather than Tyre.
Oh, is it?
You had the I in the wrong place in your mind.
All right. You're going to make me pay for adult now, aren't you?
Okay, Jim. I'm double checking the names now. Jim Bob Von Hipper Only a blip of genius. So I've recently gone over to the dark side and got a time trial bike, Cervelo P5. Instead of fixing the gear shift blips to the side of the brake levers on the base bars with double-sided tape, I modified the blip bracket, drilled a hole, and used one of the screws on top of the brake lever to hold it in place. Hey presto, job's a good one. I've not actually tried it yet on the road, but I've got high hopes. P.S. I always watch the end of the show. Thank you very much.
That was really cool. How does this work? Have you drilled into the top of your brake lever reservoir?
I imagine the gears work, but the brakes don't. Maybe test it in your driveway or somewhere quite slowly to start.
I'm assuming that's not happened, but in my head, I'm sort of thinking. But anyway, if it works...
It might not be hydraulic brakes, or can you tell they are?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a hydraulic brake, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
No.
But anyway, that looks kind of cool if it all works fine and dandy. So hack from me.
Hack from me as well.
Thomas Smith.
Oh, you get all the easy names.
I'm pretty sure I got that one right. Yeah. Love my Evoc Pro bag for travelling with my bike. As with the third wheel that can be attached, it makes wheeling through the airport and taking transit a breeze.
It does make a big difference having a decent bike.
Having a wheelie bag, yeah. I needed a second bag to travel with two bikes and found a cheap used lower-end model. I purchased a $5 caster wheel and a $5 base that fit the caster, installed it onto the bottom of the bag. The caster wheel can be removed and stored when the bike gets checked at the airport, just like the Pro model. I now have two. One Pro model and one semi-Pro model. Someone out there might like to know how it can be done. That's kind of cool, isn't it?
Remarkably neat and good job, I would say, done on that again.
Very cool, yeah.
Great stuff. Another hack, is it then?
I think that is a hack, yeah.
Right, the last one comes in from Kevin Martin, who said, I bought a round shelving unit to use as a tyre store. Now, when I first looked at the photo site, I was going to give it a sort of bodge, because it's really just three shelves, one at the bottom, one at the top that's slightly smaller, one in the middle that's slightly wider, so it kind of creates a round shape. But they've gone to such an effort to get a GCN pint glass, which must be from a few years ago, with a nice-looking beer inside it.
With a pint in it?
Yeah, I'm going hack. Just for that reason.
I'll go hack. I mean, I don't really know what I'm looking at, Dan, but...
Well, it's just some shelves with some tyres on it.
Yeah. But, you know, that's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got a story tyre somewhere.
Yeah. Right, that's the end of Hack and Bodge for this week. You can get involved in this part of the show, of course, going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just one sec after dealing with the frankly controversial fallout from last week.
We will, yeah. There were quite a few comments along these lines, but I've picked this one out from Jerry Hiltz.
This is about who won. So Dan chose one, didn't you? Which actually, I think you might have got the meaning of wrong anyway.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, apparently it wasn't relating to Mr. Miyagi and waxing.
Oh, was it not?
No, it was waxing something else, I think. Anyway,
that was
what I got from the comments.
Okay.
Versus one that I thought related to Lord of the Rings. Dan then said that he didn't like the Lord of the Rings and... You lost some friends.
I did, yeah. Well, I mean, Jerry Hiltz wrote in, he's also lukewarm, doesn't hate Lord of the Rings, lukewarm on Lord of the Rings, but You Shall Not Bask, obviously can't do it like Si, is a much better caption, says Jerry. And quite a few people, as we said, were thinking along those lines. And let us know that fact.
Coincidentally, there was a weird Lord of the Rings interlude in the Strava video I made on Saturday.
Yeah, shall we see that now?
It sounds remarkably like Lord of the Rings happening in my house.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
So, my brother and his family were staying, and he sat down at the piano, and as timing had it, just as I was finishing my vlog, he started playing the Lord of the Rings theme tune.
Lovely, yeah.
Very strange, but anyway, there you go. Quite atmospheric.
Kind of family the Richardsons are.
I can't play the piano.
You can watch Lord of the Rings.
I do like Lord of the Rings, yes. Right, anyway, this was the photo that we gave you last week, which is a cracker, isn't it? Who's the chap?
Benoit
Cosnefroy.
I thought, what's happened to your French accent?
That's
like Bristolian. Benoit Cosnefroy.
I'm genuinely worried about cycling home. I'm losing it today.
Benoit Cosnefroy.
That's the one.
on the podium of Amstel Gold, where you finished third. Our winner this week is James Porter, 5630. Put caption contest, pint of Amstel, sign us up.
Oh, sign us.
Yeah.
That's cracking. A good pun, that. Brilliant. Oh, I'm impressed with that, James. Yeah. Get in touch and we'll get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. This week's photo, you were scouring the internet for photos this week.
Oh, really? It took me ages to find a caption photo for this week, and this was the best I could come up with.
I mean, it is quite a strange-looking photo.
For those of you listening, which we haven't done for any of the Hacks or Bodies or anything, but anyway, for the caption photo this week, it's Remco Evenepoel on the podium of Liège-Bastogne-Liège, presumably just about to throw an empty bottle or bidon into the crowd. I will get you started. Remco Evenepoel receives fine for littering outside the specified zones.
Is he just me, or is he a really odd shape in this photograph?
It looks like he's got massive arms.
Really big arms. And a very small head. Anyway, speaking of UCI fines, I was reading this morning that the UCI tried to hit Pogacar with a 5,000 Swiss franc fine.
They did, yeah.
And then they took it away again.
Yeah, I haven't really read much into that. But
apparently they said he was wearing a World Champions jersey with, I think, too big a UAE logo on it. And I think it was pointed out to them it's exactly the same jersey he's been wearing all year.
Yeah.
And so they took the fine back off him again.
Well, I'm surprised they just didn't backdate all the fines, knowing...
Good point.
Yeah,
I mean, you can probably afford it, right?
I thought so.
OK, if you think you can beat Dan's caption entry, then stick your comment in the caption... Oh. Stick your caption in the comment section down below.
Yeah.
We'll pick a winner next week.
It's way worse than Adobe. Right, we're going to read out a few of our favourite comments from last week's video before we let you know what's coming up on the show. Firstly, three from underneath last week's show. Mark Lucas put, you'd bet you'd get greater mass participation by promoting free-to-air cycle races. Putting cycling behind a paywall has not helped. This, of course, is us talking about the UCI implementing new regulations and how much national federations can spend on frame sets, skin suits, etc. in track racing.
Yeah, and it relates specifically to the UCI... like essentially the kind of their motto, isn't it, is to try and increase mass participation of cycling through racing. You're right, Mark, but at the end of the day, someone has to pay, firstly, for the bike races and secondly, to broadcast it, right? So to just say you can have it free to view.
Yeah, I mean, how many sports are free to view at this point?
Yeah.
The model just doesn't seem to work anymore, does it?
Yeah, cycling is a really expensive sport to actually put races on.
Yeah, I mean, I presume Mark is from the UK, where obviously prices have been hiked quite drastically over the last few years. It is still a bit cheaper in a lot of the European countries. I think in Belgium it's still free, but it's a national sport. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those quandaries I think all sports are having at the moment, isn't it? If it's behind a paywall, how do you encourage youngsters to go in there and actually want to watch the thing?
But do youngsters actually watch TV down anymore?
No, I mean, just get little clips on TikTok.
Exactly. Yeah. Right, moving on. Winston Bead said, on the roadside, they should have a cap for youth and juniors. Mm. So this is referring to the budget cap. And, I mean, yes, they 100% should.
We've talked about it loads before, haven't we? No carbon.
No carbon fibre would be a really good way of doing things. But yeah, budget cap would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Chemistry 636, size joke at 8.52 regarding it's been an arms race, not a legs race. That's why he's paid the big bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An arms race, not a legs race, Dan.
Yes, that's what it's been.
Yeah.
Great joke, Si.
Thanks. Yeah. Oh, at least I was last week. This week, can't think of anything like that.
No.
I think I'm a bit hungry. Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe I've blown. Connor made a really interesting video last week about Wombi. So he was part of...
an experiment.
Basically the first ever like pro team to use Wombi. They had to use it exclusively because they're 3T bikes at the time. Couldn't fit front derailleurs.
Was it a 3T bike, though?
No, it wasn't.
One big enough.
The 3T didn't have a big enough bike, so they custom... painted a different one for Connor. I don't know what it was, actually. But anyway, his team universally hated it. So anyway, he was comparing his old race bike with his new Orbea Terra gravel bike. Glissmaster said that they're pretty happy with 3x.
Yeah, as did Adam Swanson, 3x for me. Purist Geek said, that seat tube is longer than Ollie's book of excuses of getting dropped on a flat section. Only joking, Ollie, you're amazing.
Paul R. Just remember, kids, this is an entertainment/infotainment channel sponsored by manufacturers that want you to buy their 1x group sets. It's not an independent organisation doing unbiased reviews on behalf of the consumer.
Yeah, Wanted to pick that one out just because that video was definitely not sponsored by SRAM, so all the opinions you got from Connor were his genuine opinions. I think we're pretty open with the videos that we do that are with partners, etc. We have done stuff with SRAM in the past, but not for quite some time.
Well, also, to be really, really clear, even if we make a video with someone like SRAM, they don't tell us what to say.
No, never.
So, like, so yeah, I mean, obviously, not everyone works in the same way as we do, but essentially, if we thought OneBuy was crap, we would not make videos about OneBuy promoting it.
No.
The reason we make videos promoting OneBuy is because we like it. Mm. And actually, I was thinking when I was watching Connor's video, in 2018, I was using that OneBuy group set on my commuter bike. Regular viewers might remember the GCN Steel hand-built bike. I'm actually looking at it right now, just behind the shop.
Oh, yeah.
And I built that with OneBuy, and I flipping loved it. And I mean, I obviously didn't race World Tour races on it, but it was great.
Yeah.
It's just people like different stuff, don't they?
They do, indeed.
People like different stuff.
Meanwhile, underneath Si's video about giving up Strava for a month, the top comment came from a guy called Ollie Bridgewood.
Yeah.
Who said, the best thing about Si not uploading to Strava is all the KOMs I got sat on his wheel last week.
Yeah, he's really worried that I'm going to upload that ride. But yeah, you can see actually what we were up to this week on GCN. I think that video is coming out on Saturday.
Nice.
So yeah, we had a nice little hit out, the super nerds. Yeah, it was good fun. Really good fun.
That was it.
Yeah, it was proper cool. And then lots of people, very kindly, I was saying in the video that what was I saying in the video?
Well, you were saying you'd done a 4-hour ride. And
that's right.
You weren't getting to show it off to anybody.
No, exactly. No one knew that I'd done a 4-hour ride except for me and my family, who really don't care that I'm doing 4-hour rides. What they cared about was the fact that they had to wait for breakfast. Anyway,
you should go out before 11.
You lot very kindly gave me some kudos in the comments. You know, someone actually, I basically said in the video that it's kudos, not kudos. And it's a Greek word, but it was first popularised in English in Britain. Some guy said, I'm a Brit, and actually it's the British pronunciation that's evolved over the last 100 and something years that's been used. So actually, originally, it was kudos in Britain as well.
Oh.
I know.
Crikey, how are you getting that knowledge?
I've no idea, but I mean, it's a bold statement, so I'm not gonna doubt it.
Yeah. Well, let's say that Martin German and half a comedian, amongst others, were those that were giving a big up for your ride. Cesar Salgado, is that right? Reading The Burnout Society, I was struck by how deeply we've internalised measurement, even in the spaces meant for rest. I realised I wasn't only chasing metrics at work, I had also turned my moments of leisure into another form of performance. Even something as simple as riding my bike had become something to optimise rather than just experience. I certainly feel like I could be going down that road.
Oh, mate, when I read that...
Maybe even measure sleep.
Oh, that was it. I was thinking of you and your whoop.
Yeah. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, exactly. I actually appreciate the book recommendation as well. I found it on Spotify last night. I was going to listen to it as an audiobook. It has got... I feel like I can share this here. It's got the worst narration ever. It was so bad, I played it to my family so we could all laugh at it. I was like,
it wasn't the author, was it?
No. It was some guy that actually in the blurb about it was like expertly read by such and such. It was terrible. So anyway, I'm going to have to buy it and read it properly.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that, Cesar. And then Tom M said, a while ago, I stopped comparing myself to others and started to use Strava to focus solely on my own progress. I stopped caring about kudos or comms or streaks and just tried to enjoy being out on the bike as much as I can. One of the best decisions ever.
Nice.
So yeah, that's cool, that. Very cool.
And then from Sunday's video, which is Connor riding up a couple of brutally steep climbs over in Italy, Alex McClay put, no bikes on this street. Inglês? No bikes.
I had a chuckle at that as well.
Yeah, it was very funny, wasn't it? Go and watch the video if you haven't already seen that one. John John put, I'm speechless at it, which is what Connor apparently said during the video. It says, doesn't shut up the entire time.
And then at 18:21, looking back down the hill, are you kidding me? Friggin' blimey.
Mm. It does look crazy, even on camera, which tends to make things look not as steep as they are in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, not long till your Super Nuggets. Firstly, coming up on the channel this week, so I already alluded to it, on Saturday, the Super Nerds are back, trying to set an FKT on the road.
Yeah.
And on Sunday...
Yeah.
Heavier cars are deadly. This is one of Connor's ones, is it?
It is indeed, yeah. It's going to be quite a heavy video, that. No pun intended. Because, yeah, it's quite sobering, really, given what's been going on. Anyway, Connor's got an interesting take on that one. So yeah, do make sure you check it out. Important viewing, I think.
Right, we've got a nugget each. Who's going first?
Go on, you go first. What's your nugget?
There's no way people are going to get onto yours there. My nugget is about my first experience of waxing a chainsaw, which I told all of you presenters about
you did.
The day after. So I got given almost all the equipment I needed by Alex the other day. So on Sunday morning, I woke up and I put the equipment together with the stand, etc.
It's beautifully done. It's like that cyclo-wax stuff.
It's really mega. Nice. I then managed to remove the chain with the Topic tool that I'd got. That didn't seem too bad. But then when I tried to find the swizzle wire, it wasn't there. So I'm thinking, have I got lying around that I can use, sort of put through the chain, so that then when you dip it in, you can just pull that out and hang it up the wax to dry. And inside the cyclo-wax package, there's a sort of cloth-covered wire that you can use for cleaning your drivetrain, and it fits rather neatly through the links of your chain, presumably by design. So I thought, this is genius. Like I said, I linked it all through in a nice, neat fashion, and then I dipped it in the hot wax that I'd been heating up, and then after the allotted time, I then turned it off, pulled it out, and put it up to hang and dry, twizzling the sort of fabric-covered wire over the top. Took it off, so far so good. Of course, the wax had got onto the fabric that I'd fed through and then dried, and so it was nigh on impossible to pull the fabric out of the chain itself. So I did eventually manage it, but there was lots of fabric left inside, which I then had to use a screwdriver to try and remove, because it would defeat the object of a more efficient chain, in my opinion. Then I finally got to the point where I thought, well, I can at least put it back on my bike now. And when I went to do that, I realised that one half of the quick link that I'd used to remove it was missing. So I spent ages like hunting high and low for a tiny little half of a quick link, to the point where about 45 minutes later, I might have just left it in the hot wax. Of course, the wax is then solid again because it's dried, so I had to heat the thing back up again and then spent ages fishing about with a fork to try and find it. I think it's not in it. Eventually, I was like, oh no, there is something there. And I managed to get out. What I failed to mention, actually, is that in the meantime, I tried to use a quick link from another bike, but that was Shimano, not SRAM, so that didn't work. So I've now got another bike that's not got a chain because I couldn't be asked to put that one back on. Eventually, I did get the chain back on with normal quick link, and then I ran it through, and I was like, you know, they say, you know, it's quite stiff once you put a wax chain back on. Well, it was stiff, and this is ridiculous. Like, it's really clunky. And I realised I hadn't quite fed it through the jockey wheels because it was on the wrong side of the tabs, and I had to take it off again and then redo it. I reckon I'd spent 2 hours.
Were you wearing cycling kit? Because chamois time is training time.
I think I can't remember now.
Hopefully you were, because you could put that on Strava, two-hour garage.
I mean, the good thing is, I think I made every mistake you can possibly make in one go. So hopefully next time. I mean, actually, it should be really simple now that I know what I'm doing.
I mean, even I, who resisted for decades almost chain waxing, like, I mean, it is actually quite
really
easy.
Simple, yeah. No, I'm confident for next time. I've now got my swizzle wire that I was missing. That was a key component.
It's got a swizzle wire.
Excuse me.
And also, I don't think you're supposed to wax the quick link.
No.
You're supposed to take the quick link out, you wax your chain, and then you stick...
Yeah, well, it means I've got an extra efficient chain now, because even the quick link is waxed.
And it's been waxed for a long time. Oh, yeah. That'd be like the new... Like, you know, like you do triple-cooked chips. It'd be like, yeah, double waxed chains. Yeah, leave it in, let it solidify, and then heat it up again.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what? That was so great. I'm going to save mine for next week.
Oh, people are going to be so disappointed. They've been waiting for size nugget. All right, let's... Yeah. Because often we forget about them, don't we? So let's leave that for next week.
Just remind me in the comments, big cats.
Yeah.
Put that in the comment section, big cats. And then when we're filming next week, I'll remember my nugget.
Perfect.
Okay.
Right, sorry mine took so long.
It was a good one. See you next week.